Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app, and on your smart speaker.
The Women's Football Show.
With Leanne Sanderson.
Absolutely first class.
On TalkSport 2.
Hello and welcome to the Women's Football Show podcast. I'll be here every week bringing you the best bits and exclusive content from the show. Don't forget you can listen back to the full Women's Football Show via the TalkSport app. This week we're on Monday at 7pm. So swipe for TalkSport 2 by Monday and you can listen for there. This week on our show, I was joined by former league striker Lucy Ward, and we look back on her football career and what life is like for her as a pundit now. Lucy, how are you? I believe the last time we saw each other, correct me if I'm wrong, was it in Barcelona?
Yeah, thanks for inviting me, Lee. Yeah, we were in Barcelona for the it was a Women's Champions League game. We're all over the place, aren't we? Just keep seeing each other and waving. I think that's it, because you're so busy. And I'm not that far behind you.
I know. It's funny because, you know, when you talk about the job that we do, and we both love what we do, don't you find that sometimes all the games morph into one because you do so many games, you prep for the games, and then sometimes people will just randomly catch me off guard on the street or in the studio and they'll mention a game and I'm like, it'll come straight back to me, but you're not always in work mode. Do you find that happens quite a lot?
Yeah. You know, I'll have, because the commentators, you know this, commentators that you work with are geeks, so they remember everything, whereas mine's transient. So like this week I'm doing PSG Barcelona in the Men's Champions League and Aston Villa Lille, right? Last week I did four Premier League games that I've already forgotten about because you just got to move on. So like commentators, can you remember when we did this? I was like, yeah, no. But you know, that's it. You just sort of try to sort of concentrate on the next game or whatever it is that you're doing next, because I don't think you can fit everything in your brain, to be honestly.
No, you can't. And I want to, before we get on to kind of what we're doing now in life after football, I want to talk about your football career. Because obviously I saw you posted a picture a couple of weeks ago and you kind of in jest said, see, I did play. And it was ironically, I recognised the picture because it was when I played for Arsenal. And why didn't you put the score in?
You know why I did. Listen, I played in a women's team from 12 years old, where the next eldest was 20. So that's where I was in the history of women's football. And the biggest moment of my career was playing an FA Cup final. And not only did I play centre-back instead of centre-forward because we were short at centre-back, but I scored an own goal after 1 minute and 30 seconds. I scored the own goal from a corner, right? I literally looked up, could see my face on the screen. That it was at Millwall and there's like 12,000 people out, you know, a couple of million watching on BBC. If there'd have been a door, I would have walked out and just kept walking. It was the most horrific experience. And you know what? I used to think, and this is where I think, not always good things come to good people. That's what I thought at the time. It's like, hang on a minute. I have worked myself and I've had a job. I've been to university and I've tried to keep going with the football. And then I get to play an FA Cup final and then I score an own goal and get battered 5-0. So, you know, that was, a lot of things in my life and in football, I've been able to laugh about straight away because, you know, like that bad things happen that you got to deal with it. Literally took me months. Bearing in mind, right, I worked in a professional football club and the banter, those who don't know about training grounds and men's football, I worked at Leeds United, and the only thing I could think of is I've got to walk back into that training ground and I can't handle people laughing because it's not funny. Biggest game of my life, not funny. We lost. I scored an own goal and I went back into the training ground at Leeds and walked upstairs And I went into my office and I went quite early. One by one, the first team squad came to my door and the manager and said, "You think that's bad? Listen to what happened to me." And they all came up with a story about how what happened to me wasn't that bad. Because everybody has, you know, rubbish things that happen. And it was mad because I expected the opposite. I expected a bit of banter, but, you know, players understand when you're playing an FA Cup final, not many get to do it. You know, that is it. And when things go absolutely catastrophically wrong, you know, it's you know, you don't need laughing at. So, yeah. No. So in a long answer to your question, yeah, that Arsenal team you played in, and you know, like, you don't need me to sort of blow up what a hot air with you, Lee, but what a great player you were and what a great team you played in there. Just like absolutely trounced everybody, you know, and you know, women's football has changed, but I think what hasn't changed is, you know, what happened with that Arsenal team and how you were at the forefront of what happened in women's football throughout that period of time.
Oh, thanks for saying it. It was funny because, you know, people that have jumped on board the women's kind of football train in recent years won't really know about Leeds because we played in back-to-back FA Cup finals. And then obviously you were at Doncaster Bells that became Doncaster Rovers Bells. They were one of the best teams when I was growing up. And then Croydon, you know, yep. A lot of players that were there. But isn't it crazy how, like, kind of, you know, teams have come and gone? And don't you think it's great now the women's game, teams are not folding anymore? Because it wasn't long ago, you know, Notts County, that had Alex Greenwood in it, Laura Bassett, you know, top players were there, and we're no longer seeing those types of teams fold.
Yeah, I mean, what you found was that the support was quite fragile, and it also relied upon what the men's team were doing. So if the men's team then started struggling, the first part of call that the money was taken off was the women's team. And, you know, it, as much as how horrible that was, it happened to us at Leeds. There's nothing you could argue with because these are the people putting money into it. I think now, because of the financial rules has changed, that men's teams don't get penalised for giving. So they can give women's teams as much money as they want and they don't get penalised in the sort of PSR rules. And I think that does help and gives that support. But, you know, that Donny Rovers team, Donny Bell's team, you know, Kaz Walker, anybody who knows anything about football, the number nine of her generation, Gail Borman, you know, some of the players that played in that team. And I went for a season to play and I struggled to get into the team, but I eventually ended up playing. I think I played left wing. Jodie was playing up front with Kaz, so I couldn't get, it was difficult to get in up front. But I ended up scoring 14 goals. We had a great season. I think we came second to Arsenal, surprise, that season. I think it was 2002, 2003, that season. But it was fabulous playing with these players who had been there and done it, you know, for England. That really helped me because when I went back to Leeds, I followed Julie Chipchase, who was sadly lost in recent years. And she was brilliant. But she moved to Leeds as manager and she took me with her back to Leeds. And that was my best ever season as a goal scorer, that the season I went back. And that's because of everything I'd learned with these players at Bells.
Yeah, so now obviously we have established that both of us actually played, because I think sometimes these things people don't remember, some do. Now, obviously, you and I have gone into a pretty similar field when we retired, but I remember when I was still playing and people like yourself and Sue Smith were kind of in the media world. I mean, you've probably been doing it for about 20 years now.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's like, Lee, it's like, I remember 2005, Sue didn't get selected for the Euros, which were in England, if you remember, and she was absolutely devastated. And I remember saying to her, listen, that is the worst ever thing that's going to happen to you in football. So how can we make it positive? How can you make it positive? And BBC were interested. She's like, I'm not sure. I was like, listen, this is something that you could start working on now. And then when you finish playing, because she was, I mean, if you remember Sue, she was like in the FIFA All-Stars before she broke. She had a horrific injury where she broke her ankle and dislocated her ankle. She was like the player for England. She was in the FIFA All-Stars with Mia Hamm. You know, it's like incredible as a kid. So that was the first real drawback in her career. But then obviously she made the most of it. So in 2005, she was working for BBC and I worked for Eurosport. So that was my first one. And then I worked for BBC after never, because it was a pundit in 2005 for Eurosport. But in 2007 was the first time I'd ever co-commentated ever. And it was for BBC. It was with Guy Mowbray, who's obviously the number one commentator. And it was in China for the World Cup. So, I got given an opportunity. And obviously, I've done it since then. So, you know, pretty, pretty experienced. And then sort of in the last sort of 4 or 5 years, I've moved and done some in men's football as well.
Yeah, because people don't really realise that, because obviously we're getting a lot more kind of highlighted now than I think we ever was before. But I wanted to highlight the fact you've been doing it for 20 odd years. Now, something we both experienced, I have to talk to you about, Luce, the online abuse. Now, we won't mention you know who, because we don't need to. But I think, you know, I really resonate with you. You're my friend. And when I see these things happening, I'm just like, it just bothers me, as we know. But I saw Liam Rossini did an interview, a video that really resonated with me. And something that I always think and I struggle with is how it affects your family. I don't think people realize that. So I want to hear about how you deal with it and how you kind of family deals with it. Because I know how I deal with it and I talk about it all the time and I talk about how my family does, you know. But how do you deal with all this unnecessary abuse?
Yeah, I mean, it's exhausting at times. You know, you've had it, you get it. You know, I think any sort of woman who is around sort of men's or women's football gets it. And yeah, it's difficult. You know, I think you're right about the family bit, because I can take it. I have my own ways of dealing with it. But I've got two nephews, one's 17 and one's 14. And as much as they're so proud of me and must like it at school, when I then get sort of hassle, or, you know, I might have said something against, you know, one of their friends' clubs or whatever, then, you know, they get it as well. And Neil, my partner, is obviously, he's Neil Redfern. He's been a Premier League player. He's managed in the Championship. He's managed Leeds. He's very good, because he just boils it down to, you know, these people are punters. These people would give the right arm to do what you do. And, you know, I think having people around me like that is powerful, because if I wasn't, like the old say, I do not accept criticism from someone I wouldn't go to advice for, right? So if I see someone put something on Twitter and I look at it and I think, well, you've never kicked a ball straight in your whole life, and you are saying to me, I don't know what I'm talking about in terms of tactics. Listen, I have worked, you know, we talked about commentating since 2005. I worked in a football league professional club for nearly 18 years. So I know how women's football works, because I've been in it. I know how men's football works, because I worked in a training ground. And you just know exactly what happens. You know how professional footballers work, and how managers work, different types of managers. I know how the professional game. So that's the authenticity that these people who slate me on Twitter really don't have. It's mad. I know you can not like the sound of my voice, that's fine, but it's mad. You sort of look at you've got people who sort of call you names, and I look at the bio on Twitter and it says mental health advocate. It's like, yeah. What? And then things like, you know, lions don't bother about the opinion of sheep. And it's like, what are you talking about? And then they have pictures with, and more frightening is having pictures with the daughter. And I think, right, you are not happy about a woman doing something that you consider to be male.
And I know, so they backtrack sometimes, because sometimes I don't go back at people because, you know, it's too draining. Yeah. And I have enough going on as you do. But I think you're right. When you see them in the picture with like a daughter or a niece or something like that, you're like, I always say to them, I hope that, you know, that little girl in your profile picture doesn't grow up surrounded by people that have these types of opinions, because yeah. You know, it's not something we should have to go through. I think we become desensitized to what it feels like because we just expect it, which is, you know, a problem in itself. So I feel like we could do a whole show on this type of stuff.
Yeah, push it up now.
I think you're brilliant, you know that. And there's a lot of people out there that support you and are all the way. And I think, you know, walk a day in the life of, and you probably wouldn't last 5 minutes in our job. So the Lionesses began the task of defending their European Championship title this week as they face Sweden in their first qualifier. Lucy and I listened back to how that sounded on TalkSport.
We start here at Wembley, the scene of England's last Euros triumph. Way back in 2022, it's Sweden first up. The road to Switzerland in 2025 starts here on TalkSport 2. Back to Stanway. Now James operating in the right wing position. Taking on Anderson. Angle tight. James dinks it in. The diving header into the back of the net. A flying effort from Alessia Russo. And England's first goal of the Euro 2025 qualification campaign has arrived.
Unmarked, in between players. Great finish.
Quick throw by Lundqvist. Into the penalty area now. Little back heel to Kafai. Takes the shot from the angle to Rolf for far post. It's in! The equaliser for Sweden. And for the most part, Wembley is silenced. And they've gone long Sweden through towards Blackstenius. She's beaten Woman Boy. Blackstenius is in! She's steered it wide! Massive opportunity for Sweden. And it really should be 2-1. Sweden escape with a deserved point. And England starts with a frustrating draw here at Wembley. It has finished. England 1, Sweden 1.
Firstly, Luz, I have a different opinion on this whole group, you know, Euro qualifiers group, because I just think it's absolutely crazy that we are in a group with Sweden, France, and Republic of Ireland. What did you make of the game on Friday night? What do you make of this group that we're in?
Yeah, the group is really hard. And I think, you know, I've heard quite a lot, and it's difficult with England because they've reached the pinnacle of the Euros. They've won the Euros. So then we get to the next level where it's accepting, not accepting criticism, but having criticism. So if you don't start the defence of your European title off when you're trying to qualify, then it's disappointing, which it is, because I'm sure Serena Wiegmann, that's what she said. And Sweden are brilliant. I think France are obviously brilliant. And Republic of Ireland will not be a pushover. We've seen that because they've got a really sort of tough team ethic. I think England did well to start with. I don't think it's not a disastrous result, is it? I think it's probably one that you would expect. But that what I would say is that England would have wanted to get 3 points at home. But it's easy, you know, people look at it from the outside and think, well, how have they not beaten Sweden when the defending champions? It's like, because Sweden, you know, and because France. And I know that the bottom two will go into the playoffs and the playoffs might be a little bit easier. But it just seems, I look at some of the other groups and I think, well, I don't actually know how that's happened.
Yeah, I don't know. I just want the best teams to be in the tournament. So TalkSport Charlotte Richardson spoke to Serena Wiegmann and Kira Walsh after the game to get their thoughts on the 1-1 draw.
Very tough match. I'm a little bit disappointed, but I think overall that we played against a very tough opponent. We struggled a little bit in possession. We wanted to get through a little bit too much through the centre, want to go around. And they were very, well, they fend very well, very physical. And as we have seen in the counter-attack, they're very dangerous. And I think also in out of possession, we had some struggles with their rotations, with the outside wingers coming inside and when to press, how to press. And I think at the end of the game, we really tried to get that 2-1 in, but it's at 1-1.
Especially at the start, it probably wasn't the most exciting game for the fans. I think it was a bit of a slower game, I'd say. As you said, it was very tactical. It was very about moving people and trying to find the spare player. And yeah, I think towards the end of the game, we found our rhythm a little bit better. But yeah, as I said, I think we'd like to do that a little bit earlier on.
Of course, we prepare. And on the sideline, it's really hard to get connected with the team because things go fast. They have to be alert in the game. But at some points, there were some questions on how we could solve it. That shows also how good tactically Sweden is.
For me, I think if the ref gets hold of the game early on, I think that kind of stops that. I think for me, there was a lot of shirt pulling. But yeah, it's a physical game. It's one of them, I think. That's what you expect from Sweden. As you said, they're the third best team in the world, so you've got to get ready for that. But yeah, I think for me, we'd like to take the game, as I said, a bit earlier on and yeah, really attack them and show what England are about.
So there we heard, Luz, that, you know, Serena Wiegmann spoke about how strong, as you did before, how strong Sweden were. I think they're a completely different team to the team we played in the Euros. Wouldn't you agree? They've obviously got Blackstenius, Rolfa, you know, top quality players. And I think in the Euros when we won it, it wasn't a true depiction of many teams like Sweden and Spain during that tournament.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, Gerritsson, the manager of Sweden, I think this is a concern for me, is that he targeted the press on Kira Walsh. Now, we all know how good Kira Walsh is, right? But what England can't do is get themselves into a situation where if she's backed out of the game, that we can't play properly. So I think that midfield area is probably one that Serena Wiegmann will look at, because we, you know, I think that they dropped a player onto her so to try and stop her progressing. And I think after England went 1-0 up, I think, sort of took the foot off the gas a little bit, and then Sweden sort of grew into the game, didn't they? Made substitutions, made a difference. We could have probably defended their equaliser a little bit better, and we were probably lucky that Blackstenius didn't score to make it 2-1. But it's really tight games which could have gone either way. And I suppose that's what we want to see. But we want to see that in the tournaments. Like you say, we want to see the best team. We want to see Sweden, Republic, all four of them we want to see in the tournament because I think they're good teams in Europe.
Yeah, and what do you make of the team selection? Obviously, Grace Clinton, you know, she's been... The fact that she was even in the squad is absolutely brilliant. She's had a really good season. But to now be starting, do you think kind of that role has become her own?
Yeah, I think that she has been a standout performer. I think she's very clever. And I don't know why she's playing for Spurs. Nothing against Spurs because her parent club is Man United. And, you know that Man United probably could have been doing better this season. But I do think Clinton... She's got a little bit of game craft about her. She understands the game very, very well. And this is what we're creating now. We're creating players who have had proper coaching from 8, 9, 10 years old. And they've got, you know, they're getting involved in the WSL. They're getting England school, you know, the age groups experience. And all of a sudden then you've got, you know, professionals who are younger, who are now students of the game. And I think that she's definitely one of those. She understands the game. And I think she sort of felt... So there's lots of positives for England. But I worry that if Russo doesn't play well or doesn't score, then we... You know, you think about all the nines. Think about you and, you know, the nines that have been over the years. Ellen White, the most recent one. I think we struggled to replace... place that what she does. Obviously Russo's brilliant, but you know, if she's injured, what on earth are we going to do? And obviously Lauren Hemp is who Wiegmann chooses as like a false nine, really.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Alessia Russo because I think she's a player that kind of splits opinions with people. I love the girl. I think she's a top girl. I think she's a top player. And what I see right now, maybe because I play that centre forward role, is a player that she scored the goal, obviously, on Friday night, then kind of went a bit quiet after that. But I just feel like she needs some confidence loose. Like, I feel like Arsenal, Jonas Edenvall, you know, bringing her in for that money. I said it on last week's show. Doesn't mean you have a divine right to play. But then I feel like with Serena Wiegmann, she doesn't feel like she is that nine. You know, Rachel Daly isn't that nine that we thought was going to come in and take that spot, really. She prefers Lauren Hemp there. She did it in the qualifier, you know, where we didn't qualify for the Olympics against Scotland. Lauren Hemp played in that nine and Alessia was on the bench. So what do you make of Alessia's move to Arsenal and kind of like this whole number nine in England? Because I still don't think it's locked in.
No, I don't think it's locked in. I think I completely agree with you. Russo with confidence and belief. I don't think there's anybody better as a nine. Rachel Daly, I love Rachel Daly because she is a typical, what I would say, a USA player, you know, a player that like you that went to the States, learned how to play properly at a level above what ours was consistently and has come back and she's made a difference. But obviously she's coming towards the last sort of few years of her career. So it's like, who do we get in as Russo? It's difficult for her at Arsenal because she doesn't always play at Arsenal. So therefore, as a scorer, you want to have that bit of belief. So can you keep you on the pitch when you might not be playing that well because you can always pop up with a goal? But because the Arsenal squad is so good, he doesn't need to do that. You know, Edenvall doesn't need to do that because he can play others. Blackstenius, obviously, Miedema coming back. So she's got to sort of find a way. And I'm sure that move will work out well for her. It's just getting herself established within that team so that she's undroppable.
Faye Carruthers was in Dublin this morning ahead of England's second game against the Republic of Ireland. She spoke to Serena Wiegmann and captain Leah Williamson ahead of the game tomorrow.
I think another very physical, well-organised Ireland. But for us, I think we have the ball even more. And what we're trying to do is break lines and get behind the defence.
Have you got a slight concern? I know, obviously, lots of different players have rotated in that front position. Does it feel as if there is, for England, that dominant figure up front?
I think our front line is really good. I'm not sure what they mean with a dominant figure up front. Maybe I don't know really what they mean because I don't have that context.
Like an Ellen White kind of figure who's always in the box, always kind of...
I think we have many players in the box all the time. So I think, as you have seen, of course, we've seen lots of strikers on Friday. We've seen many strikers in the games in February. We have many options up front and we have players high on the pitch. And you saw a lot from Alessia Russo in the centre of the pitch. Like she's, if you would talk about a target, maybe she's the target up front. But we also want to be dynamic and yeah, and be unpredictable. So, and I think we have lots of quality up front. We just want to get the ball there and keep it.
I honestly have dreamed. My cousin texted me actually and said, think about the places you were when you were dreaming of this moment, kind of thing. Obviously missed out in February, and nothing was going to get in the way of me being here. And luckily, I didn't get injured at the weekend, and I was all good.
Excellent. And Republic of Ireland tomorrow, obviously led by somebody that you know very well from club, yeah, in Katie McCabe. What are you expecting from them?
It's funny, I've never actually seen Katie play for Ireland. You know, I've seen clips and I watched games in the World Cup. But I think knowing Katie, they're all so proud to be Irish and to play for their country. So I'm expecting an aggressive game from them. And I think, obviously, they'll know a lot about us. They play against us and we play against them. So who knows? But I think, obviously, it's going to be a great occasion. The fact that they've sold so many tickets at this stadium, what they've done for Irish football is impressive. And the way that Katie's been a part of that, I think, is it's something to be proud of for her.
Now, Luce, obviously, England, Republic of Ireland, always been a big rivalry, similar to Scotland and Wales. How do you see that one going?
Yeah, do you know what? Tough. Because you look at the players at Republic of Ireland. I mean, you saw them in the World Cup, and I think Vera Powell set them up a little bit more defensively than Gleeson does or will, I would suspect. And obviously, it's over there, so England are away. And I do think that they'll have to manage the sort of fight and the spirit that Ireland have before they can cut and win the game, England. I do think it'll be quite difficult. You know, you sort of look at France and Sweden and know that they'll be difficult games just because of the quality of the players within it. But I think the collective from Republic of Ireland is the bit that's their positive. You know, they've got lots of good players, don't get me wrong, you know, McCabe, and they've got Caruso, who I was really impressed with at the World Cup, Denise O'Sullivan, lots of experience. But I think that their collective is their strength, and I think sort of overcoming that first, that battle first, before they sort of, you know, have the quality England. But that'll be tough. That isn't a foregone conclusion that England can get 3 points there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's going to be a difficult game for England. And remember, you can hear the updates of the Lionesses versus the Republic of Ireland from Faye Carruthers tomorrow evening on TalkSport.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It wasn't just England who were in international action this week. Lucy and I caught up on how the other nations got on. Now, Luce, Wales, first of all, we had Rhian Wilkinson on our show a few weeks back, you know, 4-0 against Croatia. What a great start she's got off to.
Yeah, I mean, she's got the background, hasn't she? You know, Canadian international. I think, was she in charge of Portland Thorns and did well with them? But the thing about Wales is that they have got some proper players, you know, like Fishlock and Sophie Ingle and Hayley Ladd and Harry James and Rihanna. I could go through their team and just steady, you know, with lots of talent. And I just think it's about harnessing that. And whether it's, you know, the Rhian Wilkinson has obviously got something about her in terms of sort of her energy, the knowledge that she's got. And that is a great result. And that'll give them confidence. Because I feel a little bit sorry for Wales because, you know, these players need to showcase themselves in a tournament, and it'd be great to see, because they've got some great young players as well coming through. But I think they've got a chance in that group as well. I think they've got Ukraine, Kosovo as well. So, you know, hopefully they might top that group.
Yeah, I think the fact that Rian's always wanting to manage Wales as well. Mum's Welsh, you know, and obviously we had her on the show and we spoke a lot about, you know, what would it mean for them to qualify for a major tournament. Now, another thing that kind of shocked me a little bit, Sophie Ingle stepping down as the captain after 9 years, you know, what did you make of that?
Yeah, I love Sophie Ingle. I mean, I reckon most of the games that I've commentated on her for Chelsea, I've given her the player of the match just simply because she just does things that people don't see. She's so clever. But I mean, she's been a terrific player over the years. But when I wonder whether that's got something to do with the new manager coming in and wanting, you know, it's a new qualification period and she wants someone. And the thing about Sophie Ingle is she's a good person. So she's probably said, you know what? I literally won't affect me that much. I've had my, and she, I think she's interviewed, wasn't she, saying that, you know, I mean, it might sting a little bit, but she's had sort of 9 years of it and thinks, well, it's time for someone else. Probably she'll still be, you know, in the team and she a really key part of the team. And I just think that they're a team of leaders, Wales. I think that that's the key. You know, when you've got the likes of Fishlock in there who have been there and done that all over the world, I think that Ingle's probably thought, for the benefit of the team, I don't mind this. I'll let that happen because I can see that the new manager is coming in with new ideas. But it doesn't mean she's losing her place. Hopefully it doesn't, because I think she's got a lot of years left in her at international level.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Just a word from me on Sophie Ingle. I think, I don't know, I agree with you, Luce. I think whenever she plays, I don't know. I know Chelsea have got an array of, you know, talent, but I've never really understood why I feel like there's moments where for a couple of years she was in the team consistently, and then now it's almost like she almost needs to move on to kind of get those running games. Now, moving on to Scotland, they kicked off their qualifiers with a 0-0 against Serbia, meaning they've gone 8 competitive games without a win. Where do you see the goals coming from with Scotland? Because I felt like against England, that game was a bit weird because obviously England needed to get all those goals at Hampden Park and it was all a bit strange, but didn't really see under Pedro. I mean, I had Pedro at Arsenal. So, you know, I don't know. I just don't really see where they're going, what direction they're going in.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like a lack of cutting edge. I think Pedro's like all into sort of like the tactical bit of it and how, you know, the different sort of phases of play. But I mean, they've got Martha Thomas. I mean, I'm a big fan of Martha Thomas, and she plays, you know, a way that I quite like, or the way I was, because I was quite tall, and you know, the sort of way you play as a 9 or a 10. And they've got Lauren Davidson, is it? She's scoring goals for Glasgow City. It's just not quite working out. But again, a little bit like Wales, they've got sort of experienced players in there, like Lisa Evans, Emsley, who's played again all over the world, and still got Jane Ross. I mean, I remember watching her. You know, she's obviously coming to the end of her career, but she's a finisher. And it's about, you've got to build however you play in your game plan, build it around your scorers, because your scorers are usually your best players. So he's not, obviously there's something not quite right in the way that Pedro has set up to sort of give the freedom to the players that can score in that team.
Yeah, and Martha Thomas as well didn't even start in that game. It was really strange. We did the commentary for that game and I was kind of confused. Now, Northern Ireland were involved in a 0-0 draw against Malta, a pretty frustrating one for Tanya Oxtoby's side, especially with Simone McGill having a goal ruled out. But how important would a qualification for Northern Ireland be for their football? I actually made my debut for England against Northern Ireland way back when. But I feel like, you know, how important would this be? We talk about Wales and Scotland qualifying for these types of things. How important would this be for Northern Ireland?
It's like chicken and egg, isn't it? When we've seen so many teams that qualify for federations that we're not giving support because you're not good enough, but we're never going to be good enough if you don't give support. And I think, you know, Northern Ireland in the Euros in 2022, obviously, you know, the disappointing results in there, but it's a step up. And then all of a sudden you've got girls in Northern Ireland. Hang on a minute. Look, they've gone and played the Euros. Look at, you know, look at the attention, look at the fans watching and all eyes on there. And it's a slow build, but, you know, a country as small as Northern Ireland, it's not easy at all because it's sort of doing a lot of work about recruiting. So you're looking at players, younger players coming into the WSL and other different leagues around the countries or the home nations and thinking, right, can you qualify to play for us because we can offer you this pathway? So there's lots of work that's got to be done, but it is... You know, it can be the difference between, you know, if they qualify again, you know, for next year, the difference between getting that support from the federation, getting a little bit of sponsorship, you know, growing the game within. But it's a really slow process. But these players who, you know, are Euro 22, you know, they drag in the game kicking and screaming in their particular country. It's brilliant.
And our last game, finally, Republic of Ireland, obviously England Lionesses play tomorrow. They headed to Metz where they face France in their opening game. Really good effort from Republic of Ireland, you know, after France went ahead, couldn't quite find the equaliser, you know. They really brought the game to France, didn't they? What did you make of that game?
Yeah, I mean, this is where, you know, in the qualifiers, because obviously teams like France, there's always something going on. There's always some sort of drama, and, you know, whether it's the men's or the women's team. So if you're going to try and, you know, beat a team or get close to a team like France, it's in the qualification where, you know, things might not have quite got in the groove. But great effort from Ireland. And I think that's where they see themselves now. And I completely agree. You know, being in the World Cup, we've learned lots of lessons from the World Cup. We've got a new manager who has knowledge of us because she used to be assistant to Vera Pauw before she went off to Glasgow City before Euro 2022. And again, a good core of players coming through. And again, it's about recruiting players that obviously are born in Ireland, but also ones that can qualify. And this is what you need to do. And I do think that, you know, the performance versus France, they'll look to the game versus England at Dublin and go, oh, you know, we could probably get something from this because it's an away game. It's tough. The crowd will be behind the home team. And, you know, it's not easy. And again, we talked about this group being a group of death.
Yeah, and they'll certainly have that fire in their stomach, won't they, for that. So whilst we have you here, Luce, obviously footballing expert, I want to get your prediction. Now we're approaching the end of the season. So firstly, we had Marianne Spacey on last week. I've had Karen Hills on. The championship has been unbelievable this year. So competitive. Who do you think is going to go up this season?
You know, it's crackers because there's five of them. Sunderland, Palace, Saints, Charlton and Birmingham. All have played 19 or 20 and within a few points of each other. It's been absolutely brilliant. And I think that's what you want. And this is what I think, you know, we get to the stage now where it should be two up and two down because maybe expand the WSL, but that's a whole other conversation.
That's exactly what Gilly Flaherty said on the show last week. Exactly those words.
Because you know, it's like when you're playing in a small league, there's no room for error whatsoever. So if you have a bad off day, you know, in the men's game, you have a bad off day in a 20-team or 24-team league, you can afford to draw a couple of games because you've got, you know, plenty of games left. But you can't afford to do that. You know, you've got, I think Palace still got Birmingham to play and Sunderland last game of the season. Sunderland also playing Charlton and they've still got South. So they're all playing each other again. So, gosh, to pick a winner from that, I'm not sure. I mean, you know, Max Spacey, she's, you know, what a legend she is. There's another one, you know, we're talking about legends of the game who probably wishes she was playing now because she'd be the first £1 million player, I'm sure. But yeah, I look at Palace, I think they've got a little bit of momentum behind them. So I'd say Palace, but I'd tell you what, it's a flip of the coin.
Yeah, and quick fire now. Who do you think will win the WSL?
Ooh, City.
Oh, I'm going Chelsea. Who's been your player of the season in the WSL?
Bunny Shaw, I don't think she gets spoken about enough. I think she's just scores goals for fun and she's a great player.
Completely agree. And breakout player of the season in the WSL?
It has to be Grace Clinton. I think to say that she's gone on loan from Manchester United, she would make a difference to Manchester United's side. I think she's been brilliant.
And manager, which manager have you been most impressed with this season in the WSL?
I have to say Matt Beard. I think that for Liverpool, I think that the fact that he's push Manchester United, right, you know, that they're worried about getting to the Champions League and Liverpool coming up behind, producing great performances.
And now Mark Skinner has said, it's crazy for me to fathom this, Luce, maybe I'll come out of retirement, the fact that we're not far off of seeing a £1 million player. You and I are going to give our predictions who we think that might be. It's a difficult one because I mentioned before, Barbara Banda, you know, Kunal Anji overplaying in the NWSL are going for this unbelievable amount of money. We saw Kira Walsh go for £500,000. Who do you think that will be?
Oh, do you know what? It's so difficult. You look at the Barcelona players. I mean, Pateas has sort of come back and not quite got to the levels that she could. But I'd have to say it probably be a Barcelona player. You think about the Barcelona players. What do you think? Well, the Barcelona players.
I mean
they've got some of the best players in the world.
Yeah, Bonmati.
Bonmati, yeah.
I think players like Dabinia, though, I get to watch her a lot in America. She's unbelievable. Yeah. And, you know, there's some really top players playing. But I agree with what Mark Skinner said. But I agree with you. I think it probably will be a Barcelona player or someone that will be bought out of a contract that they're getting paid really well in. So it could be Lauren Hemp.
Do you think that it will be a, where do you think they'll go to for £1 million?
I think it will come to America. I think it'll be the NWSL because they have a salary cap and then there's other different rules. And I think we're starting to see it now. I think it'll be into the NWSL. That's my thoughts. But maybe you and I will come out of retirement and we could be the first.
I might be the first million lira player, which is about 25 pence. That's about my level.
Last week, former FA Women's Pro Game Director Kelly Simmons wrote an article for The Guardian outlining the importance of youth football if England are to build on their Euro success. I asked Kelly a little bit more about that article. Kel, how are you doing? I know we see each other at like a lot of different events and stuff, and I think probably a lot of people might be thinking you actually retired, but you haven't. You're still well and truly within the game. I've known you for a long time now. How are you doing?
I'm great, thanks. Yeah, it's great to be on. I've been out of the FA for about 6 months and working, supporting in the game, FIFA, UEFA and various sports bodies, trying to keep driving women's sport and women's football forward.
Yeah, how does it feel for you? Because obviously you've been part of the women's game for a really long time. You know, you were a big part in the reason why it became the WSL. And how do you feel like you've left the game? You've obviously left it in a better place than how you found it originally. But how do you feel now you've had 6 months away from it? I know you're probably still watching every single game. But how does it feel probably a lot less stressful on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I guess it is a lot less stressful. I'm still a huge fan, watching it closely, trying to support where I can. I think it's in an incredibly exciting phase, but it's still in a growth phase. There's still so much to do. So I think it's, you know, in a summer it's made massive progress, but there's still so much to do to grow the game, to make sure everybody's got equal opportunities, to develop talent, to make the WSL sustainable, to keep England up there competing, you know. So the job will never be done, because that's the world of development, isn't it? You know, it's all, countries are always trying to get ahead, and we need to be mindful of that and keep investing and keep working really hard.
Yeah, and obviously I read your article you did in The Guardian. I want to come on to that in a minute. But I think what intrigues me is, and I want people to know, WSL, obviously some people have jumped on the women's football train recently, right? When women won the Euros. But I want to hear about like your experience of when you had all these different ideas for the WSL. You know, was it a lot of like having to kick down doors, fighting, you know, for what you felt was right? And how good does it feel now finally to see that plan coming into fruition?
Yeah, I think, you know, clearly it was, there's definitely, you know, when I went into the FA originally, because, you know, we're going back 30 odd years, you know, there were a lot of cultural battles to win around women's football. There was very, very little investment for it. And bit by bit, initially with Hope Power, we built the talent pathway and the England youth teams. We worked really hard to grow the game, to make sure girls have got the opportunity to play in schools and in clubs. And then more recently to build the Women's Super League as a professional and long-term, a sustainable league. And I think if I had to sort of sum it up really in a sentence or two, I think, you know, when we started that journey, 2018, I went in to lead the Women's Professional Game, September 2018. I'm not sure everybody was a believer that it could be sustainable and as big as it is. And the team had a really big ambition around it. And we set out a vision for wanting to be the best women's league in the world. And we felt that if we could do that, we would help change women's sport and change, I suppose, opportunities for girls and women in society. And we passionately believed that and worked incredibly hard. And, you know, we did the Barclays deal. We went and did the, you know, the BBC and Sky deal, which I think was one of those sort of, you know, big moments when you look back on in the game, because it just suddenly took it to massive audiences. And so I think, you know, it's we're really pleased, I think, with what's been done and how quickly it's developed. And it's been wonderful to see this year, you know, again, sort of record attendances, record audiences. And I think it's only going to grow. As I left the FA, I said, I think women's football will be the second biggest sport in my lifetime behind men's football. I really, really believe that, not just in the UK, but across the world. And I think if you look at all the indicators, whether it's TV audiences, attendances, brands investing, everything's going up at such an incredible rate that I just think it's got a huge, huge potential and will just continue to grow into a massive sport.
Yeah, and every week I like to get people on my show that have kind of friends of mine or different stories, players, coaches. And I think one of the concerns for a lot of people, Kelly, is that how do we stop kind of there being a breakaway within the WSL? So obviously we've got Manchester United, Chelsea, Arsenal, Man City, right? And then you see teams like Bristol coming up and they're trying, but they just can't compete. Now, how do we kind of bridge those gaps where a team like Aston Villa last year came fifth, almost made it into that four, not on the same amount of money, not on the same budget, but how do we kind of stop that gap, do you think, from getting bigger when teams kind of are getting promoted into the WSL?
Yeah, it's the biggest challenge. I think one of the biggest tricky decisions that the new co that are going to run the WSL have got to make is how they drive that competitiveness. And you can either do it by bringing in some sort of cost control cap, which means that every time the top clubs or the bottom clubs, you know, spend a bit more to get a bit nearer, then the top clubs can just keep spending because they've got more money. So do you sort of cap it and make it a more equal playing field like they do in the States? It's not really a popular and sort of done thing in British sport, predominantly, and certainly not in football, to salary cap. But is there some sort of mechanism you do to make it more equal? Or do you find a way of generating more money early doors in the development of the league and then distribute that? So do the clubs get new partner in or do they get sort of private equity in, or do the league do a deal centrally where they generate more money so that all the clubs have got a bit more money to invest in players' salaries? Because by and large, you know, I think the Men's Premier League is similar to the WSL. Those that spend tend to end up, you know, the highest spenders are at the top and the lowest spenders are at the bottom. And that's what the gap is. I think the other thing that, which Karen Carney mentioned in her review as well, is that in the women's game, it's quite sort of hard to do what like Brighton Men have done brilliantly, which is scout the world for young talent, pick the players up, and then, you know, they perform a really high level and they compete probably, you know, above their sort of salary bill, and they make, you know, I think they were like record profits, weren't they? This they announced last week because they've, you know, sold players for hundreds of millions. It's difficult to do that in the women's game because it's quite a high bar to get into the country under sort of governing body endorsement to and so there that sort of favors those bigger clubs who can afford to wait until somebody's got so many caps that they qualify to come in. So it's quite hard for those smaller clubs to compete. They can't get, however good their scouting, it's hard for them to get young talent until they've really, you know, become expensive in the market by the nature of how many international caps they've got. Well, they just haven't got the salaries to compete with British players, who you'll end up paying a premium for because of homegrown rules, which are right to have homegrown rules. It's really important we have talent that supports England alongside wanting the best overseas talent. So it's a tough one, I think. I think you've got to find a way of generating money so that more clubs can invest in their playing squads alongside other stuff.
Yeah, and I read your article last week. I absolutely loved it. And it really, a few of the things really stood out for me, Kelly. You know, you said if the FA need, the FA need to act now if they want to bridge the gap between Spain and women's football. And for those that haven't read it, they'll definitely read it now because they're listening to us talk about it. Can you elaborate a little bit on what you meant by that?
Yeah, I mean, the article starts off that I'm lucky enough to be sitting in the stadium in Sydney with my head in my hands thinking that might be the chance to have seen England win a World Cup. And why I say it might have been the chance is because I look at what's happening in Spain, although it's not just Spain, there are all countries accelerating at great development. But you look at Spain, they're world champions. And then you look at their performance of their youth teams, under 20 world champions, under 17 world champions. You know, they have a pipeline of producing some really, really phenomenal players. And then you look at sort of, you know, and you'll know this better than me, Liam, but, you know, you look at the sort of the quality of the players and their ability on the ball. And, you know, and it's sort of frightening to think that there's this pipeline of world youth champions that haven't even broken through into the first team yet. And so I think it's, you know, they are now the world leaders. And I think a lot of people in the game who sort of watch the game across the world think they could go on and dominate for the next 10 plus years because they're producing such fantastic players. We are running our youth talent development programme for girls on a shoestring. You know, the boys is £100+ million operation, really highly established academies with lots of professional experts and full-time staff and full-time coaches working in there. And you can see the fruits of that starting to come through into some really, really talented English players breaking into to the Premier League. And then I just, you know, having spoken to a lot of people in the game, that is an area I think that is still underinvested in on the girls' side and needs more investment. And I think if we don't find a way to invest in those academies and put more full-time expert coaches in working at the key ages of players' development, then we are at risk of not then, you know, falling away, having had this lovely, this fantastic golden era of winning the Euros, getting to the World Cup final. We've got to keep going. All the countries are moving at great pace. Spain are leading the way without a doubt. And we have to invest, I think, to catch up.
Yeah, and something else that really resonated with me, Kelly, was the fact that you spoke about diversifying the team and the setups within the WSL. And obviously, I was at Arsenal for a number of years and it was never really a thing. It was never a problem. You know, myself, Alex Scott, Mary Phillip, Rachel Yankee, there was loads of us. Why do you think that's not the case so much anymore? And what do you know, you know, what are the plans in place for making it better so that we start to see, you know, more diversity within the WSL? Because obviously I grew up at Arsenal. I love that club, right? Although I'm a Man United fan. And that picture obviously went viral when there wasn't one player of colour within that whole squad. You know, that can't be right. So what do you know that's happening behind the scenes that's in place to kind of make that better for everybody?
Yeah, I think... Why has it happened? I think it's happened, or one of the reasons I think it's happened, is that the centres where and I was talking about this in the article, where they used to be called the regional sort of talent centres now, that they've sort of changed. But they were predominantly, because there's so little money, it tended to be in the based in boys' academies, which are sort of in sort of more leafy and rural areas. You always use Chelsea as an example, where rather than being in the heart of West London, they're in Cobham, you know, in Surrey. And so that, you know, unless you've got sort of a parent or carer that can sort of drive out to Cobham, it's pretty restricted sort of who gets there. And I think you're just missing out on loads of inner city talent. So what the FA have done is to develop, put in place these, there's over 70 now emerging talent centres across the country that are far more accessible and in sort of the hearts of the communities across the country. And then alongside that, because a lot of girls will be coming through maybe playing boys football or mixed, you know, mixed football, boys football, predominantly boys football, which is fantastic for their development, or maybe just enjoying their grassroots football but team but have a lot of talent, that through Discover My Talent, people are able to nominate them. And that has already seen a big transformation in the diversity of the England youth team. So I think, you know, hats off to Kay Cossington, the technical director, and the people at the FA who've been working really hard over the last couple of years, knowing that that is an issue, that those centres have got to be more of them and more accessible. So that, with Premier League funding, they've been able to do that. And there's over 70 of them across the country. So I think that is really going to help just make the bottom end, if you like, of the talent pathway much more accessible and more girls in it. Basically, it wasn't wide enough. There just wasn't enough of them. They weren't in the right places. And that is something that's definitely improving.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that you left, you know, the women's game in a far better place than you found it. And I think even for someone like myself, and I only retired 4 years ago, and it's incredible where the women's game is at and the visibility for the Lionesses. Where do you think, you know, we'll continue to see in the next 5 years? Where do you think we'll be at?
Lionesses or women's game generally?
Just the women's game in England.
Well, I think I think what we're seeing, so if you take the league at the moment, I think what we're seeing with Arsenal, I don't see why that, in terms of incredible work that they've done to build their fan base and that the crowds are getting, the whole buzz around Arsenal, I think that can be the norm. That does require some clubs to step up and believe. And invest in their match day experience, their marketing, and move more games to a stadium that's more central, probably the main stadium. I like to call it the men's stadium, the main stadium, which is normally more accessible, has better fan experience, match day experience, etc. So it requires some investment and some belief. But there's no reason, I think, in 5 years why you can't be switching the TV on every week. And at the moment, you might switch it on and see, you know, quite a small crowd, and then it goes to the next game and it's 60,000 and it's amazing. at Arsenal, that needs to be the norm. And I think that can be. And I think, you know, the women's game, the WSL, will be on that path to being sustainable, sort of viable professional women's league with big attendances, big match day revenues, and hopefully, I'm sure, growing sponsorship and TV monies that are helping to make it a really strong foundation. So it's not reliant on men's football club money. And we've all been there, haven't we, when the owner changes and they don't suddenly want to fund women's football, and clubs are sort of, you know, suddenly going from professional to part-time or part-time to amateur, or making big cuts because it's at the whim of owners rather than being able to stand on its own two feet. I think in 5 years it'd be well on that journey. I think for England to still be at the top, I think it needs investment. It needs more investment in the talent pathway to make sure that we can still compete. So I think that is the one area, and that's why I wanted to flag it really in the article. It's the one area that's really grossly underfunded. Really, really does need more resources. And I think everybody in the game knows that. It's just trying to find out where that money's going to come from to make that step change.
Yeah, and I don't think people realise, Kelly, that it takes time for these things. You know, I was at Arsenal for 12 years and the club was founded in 1987, and the fans have always had a good relationship with the club. So that's why, you know, I feel like Arsenal are like the outliers of the whole thing. And I feel like the other teams kind of need to get a little bit more on board with that. But unfortunately, our time has come to an end, but I'd love to get you in with me because I feel like we could talk about this forever and ever. But thank you for everything you've done
for the game.
I'm still glad that you're still involved in it some way, somehow. And thanks for joining me on my show. That's all for this week. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week where we'll look back on all the action from the FA Cup semi-finals.